This Sunday marks Children's Day here in Korea, a national holiday dedicated to the pursuit of children's rights, their well-being, and happiness. To mark the occasion, we've invited a guest to discuss the art of communicating with our children, which, if done right, could hold the key to nurturing kindness, creativity, and confidence. We now connect with Dr. Rebecca Rowland, Harvard lecturer, speech pathologist, and working mother. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Rowland. Maybe we need to touch on the basics first. Do you think in general we're having enough deep, valuable conversations with our children today, competing with things like screen time?
Yes, I do think screen time is a big issue, and I don't think we're having enough deep, meaningful conversations. I think that we tend to talk a lot, and we often find ourselves talking what I call talking at our children. So we tell them what time we have to go places, when they need to do their homework and things like that, but not really with our children, where we're really trying to understand their minds and thoughts.
Maybe because parents are also busy. I mean, you would understand, you're a working mother. I'm sure time is of an essence. So the easiest method for, I'm not a parent yet, but I would imagine, is to pack our children's schedule with things that we might find exciting for the parents and the children alike. And that's a great start. And then what? Should we have a deeper conversation about whether they like it or they don't like it?
No, exactly. Yes, I think this isn't something we can do 100% of the time. Of course, we need to get our children places. But even if we start two or three times a day, taking the time and really understanding what our children are thinking and feeling, it goes a huge way toward building the relationship.
Okay, eventually I'll get to some of those tools, but maybe we can start with the fundamental principles or important strategies for effective communication with children.
Sure. So I actually think about it like the ABCs, because it's easy to remember.
Okay.
So the A is being adaptive, meaning just really noticing what time and place works for your child to talk, or really when they open up and emphasizing that. The B is for back and forth. So I'm really thinking about letting you talk and also letting the child talk, having sort of a balance between you and the child. And C is for child-driven, meaning just really starting with what's on the child's mind, whether it's something that's exciting or something that's worrying them.
Dr. Rowland, it's funny because you said this is effective communication tools with the children of the family or children nearby that you adore and want to have a better relationship with. But I feel like I could, you know, maybe take this and apply it to adult relationships too. I mean, sometimes we, and look what I do for a living, we like to hear ourselves talk a lot. And yeah, you need to make room to listen, and that's really difficult too.
Exactly. I actually hear that all the time, that this would be equally effective for adult relationships.
Okay, so the ABCs, be adaptive, the back and forth, and child-driven conversations. Now, actually, this is really convenient for all of our listeners. You've written sort of a guidebook in case the ABCs, the general rule, is not enough. You go deep in the art of talking with children. It has earned wide recognition, with some readers even calling it a lifeboat for many parents. You do need the ABCs. So for our listeners who haven't had the chance to read it yet, maybe you can provide a glimpse of what they can expect, some of the tips you provide in the book.
Sure. Yeah. So it's really a combination memoir and guidebook, since I'm the mom of two kids, and I really want conversations to be fun and practical for the whole family. So I've drawn on my own experience as well as a mother. I really think about specific conversation starters and prompts by age and stage. So you can think about, well, if my child is 2 versus 10, what should I talk about? How can I talk to them differently? And I think about also 7 different areas where you can affect a children's development and where children are really interested in having conversation. And I emphasize each of those in the book.
Maybe you can't cover all 7, but maybe a few examples, Dr. Rowland?
Sure, of course. Yeah. So I talk about learning, how we can build lifelong learners through conversations.
Okay.
And things that are not as obvious. So how we can support children in becoming empathetic through really taking each other's perspectives in conversation. And other examples, I think it's so critical to be open to others. So rather than being biased or having stereotypes, helping children understand diversity and appreciate it through our conversations. And finally, creativity and play, I think, is a really critical one.
Okay. What kind of play? I mean, again, see, I'm going to the event. Am I going to art classes? Am I cutting up, you know, maybe in leftover newspapers? Like, does it have to be activity driven, or should I just take my cues from the kids?
Yeah, it actually doesn't have to be activity driven. It's perfectly fine if it is, but you can just sit with the child, say they're playing with Legos, and say, well, what could we turn that into? Or how could that be bigger or faster or stronger?
What if they're stubborn and they're like, Mom, I don't need you. I'm going to do this on my own.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's perfectly fine. Then I would suggest, why don't you play alongside them? You make your own thing and the conversation will naturally evolve.
I love that you have an answer for everything.
I try. I've done this for a while.
I've looked at some of the interviews that you've given other media outlets, and you emphasize a point of take advantage of small day-to-day conversations to foster creativity, reinforce bonding. For example, I remember when my nephew was very young, he watched Wallace and Gromit for the first time, and he asked me, does the moon really taste like cheese? And I just kind of gave a blank stare because I didn't know how to answer that. So when they, and as children do, provide something really creative, is there a right or wrong way to approach that?
No, actually, and I love that because I think that's to me why I call it the art of talking to children. It really is an art. Okay. And it's all based on your personality too.
Okay.
So for me, what might be a good answer might not be the same for you.
I wonder, how would you answer that, though? It doesn't taste like cheese. Probably
yeah,
doesn't do it.
I mean, I might say, I think it looks like it tastes like cheese. And I'd say, I wonder what kind of cheese it would taste like.
So you keep the conversation alive. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For my next conversation with my nephew.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought this was also an important point you raised in a previous interview. There are many things that occupy children's time, partly because we fill their schedules with so many things to do. But you allude to maybe you need to provide some empty slots of time so they can reflect. How important is that? Just room to reflect, essentially.
Yeah, I think it's critical. I mean, I'm definitely a big fan of activities. I think they give kids a lot. But I do think there's a tendency in our culture just to really overpack kids' schedules so that they're not really thinking, do I even like this? What do I want to try next? Mm.
That's a good place to start. What do you like?
Exactly. Yeah.
Your book also explores the concept of what you dub rich talk, these deeper conversations where we're fully engaged, really listening. Can you maybe elaborate further and how we go about holding richer conversations with our children?
Sure. So these are definitely those more meaningful conversations when kids are being creative or when we're thinking creatively and we're helping kids stretch. So maybe we're helping them be more empathetic or take someone's perspective or even resolve a conflict. So these are just conversations that might feel easy and fun in the moment or hard, but they're allowing kids to stretch beyond what they were able to do before. And I think really focusing on open-ended questions and comments can be one easy strategy. So rather than something that has one right answer, ask a child a question that has many right answers and see what they say.
Okay. Even on complex issues, because as your kids get older, I mean, they start having, I think, more complex questions about beauty. What is it, for example? I think that's a tricky one, right? We tell our children it's in the eye of the beholder and everyone is beautiful. But I mean, come on, look at social media and what we're connected to all the time. And it perpetuates a very standardized type of beauty, doesn't it? And when it gets not just that, but these different and more difficult conversations on beauty, race, inequality, should we still keep it open-ended?
Yeah, definitely. I really do think we should. And I think one thing to keep in mind is helping children think critically about those things.
Okay.
Sometimes by looking at things together, say, look at an Instagram account and say, well, what kind of standards of beauty are they perpetuating? What do you think? And really having that conversation.
Look at Instagram together. I don't think I've ever heard any experts say that before. But I think the looking part is probably not the emphasis. Togetherness is what you want to emphasize.
Together,
right?
Yes. I'm definitely not saying spend your time on Instagram. But I think, you know, we need to help children be critical about it, and the only way is to really actually look at examples. So.
Okay. That's a good place to start. What are some common misconceptions adults have about communicating with children? And how can these be addressed?
Yeah. So for one, I think we often don't take children's ideas seriously. So we often think, oh, when a child says something, you know, like, oh, is the moon made of cheese or, you know, something else? We often think, oh, they're just being silly. They're not really thinking that. Or we might talk down to them because we don't think they have really big ideas. So I think the first thing is just to really realize that even young children are having big feelings, big ideas before they can even say what they're thinking.
And that very moment, the small moments essentially, and we have many of those in a given day, and you don't have to address every single one of them, but some of them should be addressed, and to foster things like kindness and creativity. These don't come suddenly in your teenage years, does it?
Exactly. I think that's another misconception is that, you know, children are either there's a child who's kind or isn't kind or empathetic or not empathetic. And really all children can be one of those things. It's just that they need time and space and support to develop those skills.
So how do we best foster them? Starting with good communication. Okay. So it is, I think, pretty difficult to balance between authority and approachability for any parents. It's easy to find one parent playing good cop, for example, the other playing bad cop. One's a disciplinarian, the one seemingly lenient. What is your advice to parents or educators seeking this very delicate balance?
Yeah, so I think one thing to keep in mind is you don't have to be permissive while having great conversations. Huh. So you can still set boundaries. You can still say, you know, we can only do this so many times while also seeking to help your child collaborate with you and seeking to understand, well, what's the reason my child's behaving as they are? I remember, so when my son was younger, he used to feel really like, I just want to finish this one thing on this game before we go to school. And I realized that rather than fighting and spending 10 minutes fighting about it or arguing about it, just saying, okay, if this is really important to you, we can spend that time as long as we can get ready fast after the fact.
Did he get ready fast?
Yeah. So he actually did because that was important to him.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I would think that this is also a long process of, you know, trying different methods and trying. And also, I think most importantly, gauging what's important to our children. Right. If they say gaming is important, maybe we should see through. That sounds rather difficult, though. What if a parent thought gaming was a waste of time?
I think the thing is another key is to wonder why is something important to your child. And if it's, you know, because it's fun with a friend, find something else that's still going to satisfy that need. So if you think something's a waste of time, try to understand, well, what's the reason my child likes this? What's the underlying interest? And try to find something similar that you think is less of a waste of time.
Okay, because clearly to him, I'm not saying it was a waste of time, but because I think gaming could be really cultivating and exciting too. There are many different kinds of games out there, but nonetheless, that's kind of one of the misconceptions, right? I grew up in an era where video games would make us violent. I mean, there are these really extreme conclusions that we had jumped to, but okay. So figuring out why it's important. And if you don't like it, finding an alternative for the children might be a good approach too, to see if they like that too. All right, Dr. Rowland, our last question today. The roles of nonverbal communication skills, like active listening, I would imagine, is just as, if not more important, but it's really difficult in practice. We try, but sometimes our minds just drift somewhere else, or worse, we may even intervene. Adults have more experiences. We do know a great deal and we just want to help. And that help doesn't always help. How can we cultivate better listening skills?
Yeah, so I definitely think active listening is key. And one thing is just to remember that when we're modeling active listening skills, we're actually teaching children to listen to us later on. So it actually has a double benefit in that way.
Okay.
That they're going to be better able to do that. So I really emphasize helping a child identify their feelings and thoughts. So you can say things like, it sounds like you're feeling this way. Is that right? Or that sounds stressful or exciting. Could you tell me more? So you're really trying to help them identify what is that feeling? What is that thought? And you're checking with them. So you're not making an assumption. Oh, you feel sad. You feel bad. But you're actually checking in with them to see if you're correct or if they can, you know, tell you something that's different.
It's like a mini interview, isn't it?
Exactly.
I'm glad some of the skills that I learned in my work could be applied.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rowland. We appreciate your insights.
Oh, yes. Thanks very much.
And happy Children's Day from us.
Thank you.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.